Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Friday morning. It is 15 minutes past 9 o'clock. Very nice to have you with us. We have a great panel. Let me introduce everybody to you, and we will get started. It is a busy day. A lot has gone on. We have a lot to unpack, as the kids say, so we will get to that. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, and we'll get to those in just a little bit. Let me welcome our group. Libby Post is here. Libby was away Monday and Tuesday to celebrate the new year.
That's right.
So
I wasn't away. I was just
away from us.
Yes.
Yeah, not here with
yes.
us. So we welcome you.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for being here today.
Appreciate
My pleasure. It. Very nice. Political consultant. I should have given your title. I apologize.
Yeah, and soon you'll have to add lobbyists once the session starts.
Okay.
Okay. So just
full
right.
disclosure.
Well, just
yeah.
text me on that, will you?
I will.
All right. Aaron Vasidi is a senior at Siena College. Economics professor. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Very nice to
excited,
have you.
I guess.
To be here?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, good. We like quasi-excitement.
Yeah.
It's sort of usually the best we can muster
yeah.
up. Former associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain, is here. Mike was supposed to be with us on Tuesday, and he was celebrating the new year. No, I don't know what.
Yes, yes.
Well, I'm happy
yes,
to,
yes, yes.
to wish you
sure.
a happy new year. What year is it, Libby?
5780.
Oh, good. I think it's going to be a good year.
You think?
Yeah.
I think yeah. so, too. People have asked me, so what year is it, just to see if,
right, that was
know.
A test.
Yeah,
so
a test.
You passed.
Don't write 5779 on your check.
I won't. I won't anymore.
Alan Chartok is with us. Alan, good morning. How are you?
I'm tired. I'm doing too many things. All these people are coming up there mad at me because they say I gave up my column in the Berkshire Eagle. I say, read it in the Berkshire Edge. That's where I am now, the BerkshireEdge.com. And they say, oh, okay. But some people don't have computers. That's the problem. But if you have a computer, that's where you find it, the BerkshireEdge.com.
BerkshireEdge.com. But how does that make you tired?
I'm tired because I'm just thinking about
all
the people,
stuff.
All
yeah,
the things, you know.
Well, that can be wearying. I understand that.
It's wearying.
Yeah. Well, good morning. It's good to have you here. Why don't you tell us about the Lockbox?
Well, the Lockbox is doing very well, and it's not doing well enough. We have to get where we're going. And, you know, I say it again and again and again, and I mean it. We're nothing more than everybody getting together and doing this. It's a barn raising. It's the way we've always done it. We're doing it again this time. Joe, tell us exactly how much money we've got.
Absolutely. Alan, we right now in the Lockbox have $206,192, which is $293 to go by, with just over 2 weeks. On Monday, it'll be 2 weeks to
so
the
that's,
fund drive.
So that's not a lot of time, ladies and gentlemen. We have to raise, pardon me, $300,000 basically in the next 2 weeks. Okay, it's formidable. Have we ever done that before? We have done it every single time. We're exactly where we have been every other time. It's when everybody looks at themselves and says, okay, I can do something. I can put $5 in. I can put $1,000 in. Hey, somebody is going to put $10,000 in, I'm sure of it. But wherever you are, you know, this radio station is here for you, and it has been here for you at the worst time ever in American history. We have a president of the United States who is totally out of control, and we've been telling you about it in the beginning. We were there first, and we'll be there with you as it all goes forward, because we have a lot of news to talk about today. So come on, folks, let's make this happen. It's our radio station.
WAMC.org, WAMC.org, and the link is there to do this. And then, go ahead, Alan.
And not that it matters, Joe, but let's talk a little bit, if we can, because this is not why people support the radio station, but it's a wonderful incentive. about the Capitol steps. Go ahead.
It is the Capitol steps, Friday, November 1st, our annual event. I think this is the somethingth year we've done this, over five, I know, sixth, seventh, eighth, somewhere in there. And we have Capitol steps come in right around November. It's always around an election day. And we all get together. It's a big family outing. All the WAMCers take over the egg, and we have a wonderful night. Ever since we started doing this, it's been sold out. There are only a certain number of tickets. If you would like a pair of tickets, I would suggest you do it quickly.
When is it?
It's Friday, November 1st.
Okay.
Friday, November 1st. And it's $150 for a pair of tickets. And you can do that right now. It's WAMC.org. If you go online, and it should be in the drop-down menu, if you don't see it there, just put it in your comment box, and we'll make sure you get your tickets. If you are technologically challenged always or just at the moment, feel free to call 1-800-323-9262, 1-800-323-WAMC, and it'll be a beautiful night.
And, Joe, it will be, and the only thing I live in fear of is somebody who's going to call me up and yell at me and say, get me some tickets. I know I can. You can do it, and I can't. If they're gone, they're gone. So please do it now, and let's everybody celebrate together. You know, you are so right, Joe, 1-800-323-9262 or WAMC.org.
You know, I don't want to beat this any more into the ground, but but to your point, Alan, is just imagine, you know, today was nuts, or I'm sorry, yesterday was crazy. The day before that was crazy. And just for us to be on the air for 2-3 days, which is still very respectable for a fund drive, that's fine, that's great. But man, if we didn't have to do that and the money were already in the lockbox and right. We could continue covering what we always cover and do what we always do, I think that not only would be lovely, but very important.
You know, Joe, it's a profound point. You know, baloney aside, anything that we do to encourage people, this is where we live. It really is where we live. Let's make it happen.
WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262, 1-800-323-WAMC. All right, let's go. We'll be reminding you and updating you as we go along, but let's go to the stories of the day.
Oh,
and
boy.
it
Which
is
one?
Well, that's oh, it. It's been really very hard to follow the story because so much is coming out. I was at an event last night. I was coming home, and at 11 o'clock on the Brian Williams show, they were still getting new information, a big data dump with all the text messages and everything, and it's just that kind of capped a day where it was all of this stuff going on. Let us begin, just because it's as good as any other place to start, with the Volcker testimony. Alan, you were talking a lot about this yesterday and very curious as to what was going to be said. So we know that President Trump wanted Ukraine's president to launch investigations before a face-to-face meeting, according to the State Department texts show. And House investigators released numerous text messages late Thursday night illustrating how senior State Department officials coordinated with the Ukrainian president's top aide and President Trump's personal lawyer to leverage a potential summit between the heads of state and a promise from the Ukrainians to investigate the 2016 U.S. election and an energy company that employed the son of 2020 Democratic candidate Joe Biden. The text, which former special U.S. envoy to Ukraine Kurt Volcker provided investigators during a nearly 10-hour deposition Thursday, revealed that officials felt that Trump would not agree to meet with the Ukrainian president unless Zelensky promised to launch the investigations and did so publicly. Although the text did not mention Biden by name, congressional Democrats leading an impeachment inquiry are pointing to them as clear evidence that Trump conditioned normal bilateral relations with Ukraine on that country, first agreeing to launch politically motivated investigations, that according to top Democrats. Now, that is from the Washington Post. Meanwhile, on the front lawn of the White House, the president said, as my mother would say, in front of God and everybody, that, hey, China, you should investigate Joe Biden. You get political dirt on my political rival.
And remembering that China has a great deal that they want from this country, right? In terms
That's
of
right.
This. So every bit of this raises the suspicion that China will do it. It's a cheap date in order to get over on the United States, and that's what we have to worry about.
But there's also the whole Ukraine story, withholding meeting with Zelensky, the withholding of foreign aid, the whole issue with China smacks me as another instance of the very thin line between leverage and a quid pro quo agreement. That, you know, Trump asked China to do this, and if China does this, what do you expect Trump to do? Drop the tariffs.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say. He'll be able to come out of this saying, oh, we cut a deal, because they're meeting next week. Oh, we cut a deal on trade and we're all back to normal, because the recession is starting to hit certain sectors.
Let me just read this line from the New York Times and just let this set in for all of us as we go on in the conversation. The president's call for Chinese intervention means that Mr. Trump and his attorney general have now solicited assistance in discrediting the president's political opponents from Ukraine, Australia, Italy, and, according to one report, Britain. In speaking so publicly on Thursday, and that, again, in front of God and everybody, a defiant Mr. Trump pushed back against critics who have called such requests an abuse of power, essentially arguing that there was nothing wrong with seeking foreign help to fight corruption.
Well, there's a reason for that, and that is that during the 2016 campaign, when he famously called on Russia, if you can hear me, go out and find Hillary Clinton's emails.
And then boom.
And they did.
But they did. That very day, Mueller's report found that is when they began hacking the DNC computers. But the Mueller report chose not to identify that as an indictable event, and therefore, because it was not something he was indicted for, it's okay to do it again.
Right.
And he's doing it again. And that is the narrative. And this is where the civics lesson and, unfortunately, the population is not up on its civics lessons.
That's right.
The civics lesson is, what is wrong with a president of the United States using, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in military aid or other inducements to get foreign countries to investigate his political rivals? And if they can't see the problem with that, he's going to skate through this. And that's the talking point. And that's, I think, the strategy. I think that's what the people around him are recommending. These are the new words. These are the talking points. What? You don't want an investigation by a foreign country of this corruption? This is terrible.
So, Alan, there were people yesterday saying that just by saying what he did about China, that was an impeachable offense, just what he did yesterday. And many of the talking heads that I was listening to throughout the day yesterday said, okay, but where were the Democrats? Where was Nancy Pelosi? Where was Adam Schiff in coming out and immediately calling him out on it? Do you think the Democrats missed an opportunity yesterday?
I don't really know. It's complicated. It's impeachable. There is no question it's impeachable stuff. There's a real question as to whether these Republicans in the Senate will ever get off their duffs and say, you know, it's best for this country, because they're going to have to pay for this at some point. At some point, we're going to look back and we're going to say, where were you? Why did you do what was needed at the obvious time? You didn't do it. But right now, they are between a rock and a hard place. They're not doing a thing about it. And yes, Joe, I think it's impeachable. I think that the Democrats have to sort it all out and have to make it clear. These texts that were provided by Volcker are incredible, incredible. They make it clear that there are people on the inside who were furious about what was going on. In other words, the Trump people were furious about what was going on. Some of them saying, if this continues, I'm going to have to resign. It's incredible.
It is incredible. And the other question I have about that is that, meanwhile, people within the White House, within the Trump administration, I'm just being warned that we have a break. We lost all track of time. That was really good. So let me stop there. I'll start with that when I come back. We'll take a break. We'll return right after this. Good Good morning. Welcome back. And welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Aaron Pasitti, and Libby Post. We should mention our regulars, our Friday regulars, Judith Enk and David Soar. You're the only one who made it, Aaron.
I feel so alone. No offense, Libby.
But we're here.
Mike, I know.
David was with us
company.
Yesterday and had he was supposed to be here today, and then he had a last minute something thing. Some crime thing. I don't know.
Libby was saying, he must have a job or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Judith is traveling, so we'll just thanks to them. But we're delighted you are all here. Thank you very much. A reminder on the lockbox. We need you desperately. WAMC.org, WAMC.org. And so the one other thing I just wanted to point out before we go to letters and start talking about this any further is the other thing that we learned yesterday is that there is an IRS whistleblower said to report that Treasury a political appointee might have tried to interfere in an audit of Trump or Mike Pence. That's interesting. So that's another whistleblower. And I think there I know Rosemary was talking about this earlier in the week, that there was an IRS whistleblower. I think this is another, right? This is a different whistleblower than the one that was previously being worked with Congressman Neal's committee.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that too. And it's an IRS service official who filed a whistleblower complaint reporting that he was told that at least two Treasury Department political appointees attempted to improperly interfere with the annual audit of the president or vice president's tax returns. And that is according to many people who have access to the document. Alan, do you think we're going to hear more and more about the taxes, that that's going to become a flashpoint?
If I may interrupt, Alan, don't you think that it's just a pattern where whistleblowers are going to be coming out of
the
woodwork?
Yeah. That's what I was going to say.
I mean, you know, whistleblowers are now emboldened, seeing. It just seemed like it was a dam waiting to crack, and the whistleblower about Ukraine kind of began that cascade, and you're going to start hearing more and more, and Trump will portray it as the deep state trying to undo his presidency, his legitimate election as president, and that will be the narrative, and then people will have to decide. These are just partisan whistleblowers, and they should be hung, don't you think?
Yes. Drawn and quartered, I think, is how he put it.
Well, I do think that you're all right, that this is the beginning of the end. I mean, I think we do know that people who are of courage will now come forward. And if the information is right, if what they are saying is correct, it won't matter where they're coming from. It will matter whether the information is correct or not. And I think that in the case of the IRS whistleblowers, that's very dangerous stuff. Hey, look, we all pay taxes, and I had people examine my returns, and believe me, in one case, I actually came out with a little bit more money than I went in with. But that's what we all have to suffer. There's an interesting story today that the IRS is sort of whimpering and saying, you know, we do look at poor people more than we look at rich people, because rich people are harder to look at. It's unbelievable stuff. But here we have I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And when you slash the staff of the IRS and its auditing forces, Trump has done, it makes it even more difficult to do what Alan talked about.
Yep. Right. They do not have resources to update their computer system or to hire people to go after tax evasion, and that is their best defense against tax evasion, is for people to be worried they'll get caught.
Yeah.
Peter, in his letter to us with the subject line Trump's game, said, I think Trump intended to get official dirt on Biden, and then he will feed Ukraine to Putin anyway. Bill says, it doesn't matter that Trump made the statements in the open. In fact, it helps him. 35% to 40% of the electorate are with him regardless. This portion of the electorate thinks it's okay to do what Trump and Barr and Giuliani are doing. But the point that's missed in that, and I don't disagree with Bill, but the point that's missed in that is that There are some that said just what he did yesterday was impeachable alone. That if you that we're going down the slope that every day as things get crazier and crazier, that there becomes more and more irresponsibility.
I mean, you know, imagine Joe, impeachable, yes. Convictable is the question.
Right. Right. Exactly.
I mean, imagine if Obama did this. Where would Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell be standing at this point?
I know, but using I agree with you. But using that logic just reduces this to Democrats against Trump. Mm-hmm. That's all this is.
Right.
When it really was Republicans against Obama trying to do everything they could to stop him. It's a lot more than that this time. I mean, it's just
it's about the fabric of our democracy. It's about the yes. whether or not we're going to have a democracy when this is all over. It's about whether or not the tenets of what keeps us not straight in the sexuality way, but straightforward in terms of we have a democracy. We need certain tenets to be upheld. Whether the presidency is going to be respected at all on the national stage in the future, whether we will be able to regain our prominence, that's what's at stake here in the long term.
Did you hear Ruth Bader Ginsburg was speaking yesterday, and a student at a college or university, and a student asked about what is going on now, and she just said, it's an aberration. And you know, it's an aberration in our history, and I hope she's right.
I think to some extent she is. We have come back from massive scandals before. I mean, everyone, you know, people are saying, if you look at Facebook and the political stuff, you know, that this is that Watergate is child's play compared to this, and that, you know, this makes Nixon look good. But we got through that. We got through the Teapot Dome scandal. We've gotten through other things in the past, but no one threatened the democracy as much as this man has. And that's what we're going to have to overcome. And Mike, what you said before about civics is absolutely right. And I've said this before. We stopped teaching civics in school. You know, budget cuts, this cut, that cut, this notion that it's not that important for people to really understand how government works because it's too big. And now we really don't understand what's going on. And we don't understand impeachment. We don't understand the difference between the House and the Senate and what happens.
Yeah, I think Trump has taken this to a new level, because you could argue that for the past 40 years we've had something of a plutocratic oligarchy where politicians have used their power essentially to enrich special interests, the top 1% of the income distribution with their policies. That's one thing. What Libby and Mike alluded to, I think, is spot on, is that this actually threatens the
fabric.
Yeah, the institutional structure and the fabric of democracy. And with Trump's comments on China yesterday, it's almost like he's daring Democrats to impeach him.
Yes,
I mean, it's just preposterous, and I don't understand the strategy aside from you want to take it up a notch? I'll take it up a notch.
I mean, last night I was watching MSNBC, and one of the shows they were saying, I think it was Chris Hayes, that there's a one-man war room going on, and it's only Trump, and he's not bringing anybody else in. He's not taking anyone's counsel, which has been his presidency. He's never taken counsel from anybody. And so, yeah, he's doing this dare thing. Go ahead, try it, because he thinks that that's what works, because that's how he worked in business.
Sure.
Yeah, but think about it. If he is indeed, as you say, Aaron, daring the Democrats to impeach him, it could be his sinister plan. He wants to be impeached. Then Mitch McConnell will control when and how that happens. The timing might be advantageous in that it will all happen in the early spring. And then they will vote, and they won't get the 67 votes
and
they need.
And he'll say,
exonerated!
But he'll say exonerated, and 30 to 40% of the people will believe it.
Right, and that'll propel his campaign to victory.
Well, not if the other 60% say this is crap, and we're going to vote for whoever the Democrats nominate.
That 30 to 40%, like I've said for a while, is going to vote for Trump or Republican no matter what happens. It doesn't matter.
Right.
And then you have probably another, 30 or 40% who are going to vote Democrat no matter.
It's the middle,
swing voters or the people who might be ambivalent about coming out to vote. That's really what's the determinant here, because, you know, with the increasing political polarization, those sides have been locked down.
Well, I think it's a little bit worse than that. In other words, it isn't only 30 on either side. There are more Democrats than there are Republicans in this country. We know that. Yeah. The real question is, what's the incentive to get out and do something for the Democrats, the Republicans, who, because of the distribution of income in this country, Mr. Economist, and I think you'll probably have something to say about this, have more at stake. People tend to defend what they have more than what they may want, put gently. And therefore, if the Democrats can come out and vote as well as the people, the purples in the middle, then you really got an election victory for whoever is running. It is so interesting how scared this president is, obviously, mm-hmm. of Joe right. Biden or Elizabeth Warren or any of the others, because he understands exactly how he has to keep that Republican base mobilized. It's always been that way. We say it over and over again, but it means something.
But we also have to remember what happened in 2018. It's a blue wave that was bigger than after Watergate, and there is still a tremendous amount of grassroots activity going on in this country, getting people out to vote. We'll see what happens in 2019 in the local elections, how the increase goes up, and that's going to keep the focus is going to stay on 2020 like a laser, and we will see. I think we will see that the progressives, the Democrats, the grassroots folks have a better ground game.
Yeah, I have a tough time seeing that. Even if the House impeaches him and the Senate votes not to remove him from office, which I think is the really likely outcome at this point,
exactly.
That even the impeachment vote by the House might further mobilize the grassroots Democrats mm-hmm. and some of those people who might be fed up with how Trump has treated this office and this country and just the disrespect for the citizenry and the institutions.
Well, polling is showing that people are getting tired of his stupidity.
Well, you may be right, guys. But the other way to look at this is there are an awful lot of Democrats that I know and progressives that I know who are holding up their hands and say, see, nothing matters. I give up. And that's what you worry about.
Yeah.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Aaron Pasitti, and Libby Post. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Let's go to the letters. Kathleen said, I read accounts that China has also been urged to investigate Elizabeth Warren, (!), 2 to be exact. So
actually, I did mention that before because, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, her question is, so will Trump try to pick off every Democratic top rival using our federal government and his leverage with foreign governments?
No, what he's doing is he's making an assessment of who his opponent is going
yes.
to be. And his opponent, he thinks, is going to be Biden. But just in case it's Warren, we'll throw her in too.
This from another Alan on impeachment. After diving into Federalist 65, I learned that you don't need to commit actual crimes to be impeached. Ergo, we should have initiated articles of impeachment as early as the Muslim ban or even earlier, when he settled his fraud case for $25 million just after the election. Any of his shenanigans can be considered untoward as it relates to the health of the populace. So why now?
Well, I think you have to convince the American people, right?
Right,
I mean,
right.
You know, this is you don't just impeach for the sake of impeaching because it's you've got a talking point. You've got to have the weight of public opinion solidly behind you. And frankly, even what we're hearing with the Volcker testimony and everything else, I don't know that we're absolutely there yet. I mean, the one thing we had with Nixon were the tapes. We knew. I mean, it was real proof. Here, it's pretty intellectual. We have people on the inside saying this is wrong, this is just wrong, but it's not the same thing. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, we have a redacted phone conversation, which last night became very clear that the memo was not forthcoming with everything that was said on that phone call.
No, I agree with that, Libby. I agree. Look, you know, nobody thinks he ought to be impeached more than I do. Nevertheless, I'm talking about what the level of public confidence will be in the whole process.
Well,
And
the one thing the Republicans have done very effectively is undermine the public's confidence in government.
And the media.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go back to letters because we have many. We go to Ruth, who says, Trump solicits assistance from China, echoing the words he said to Russia during the 2016 election and offering something, a better deal in trade for China, like he did on the phone call, money he was holding back. You would think he would do this. A normal politician wouldn't, right? But I think he knows Please pre-read your letters. But I think he does it knowing it will cause a hailstorm in the media, as it has and should, and his supporters can say the Democrats and left-wing media won't stop. They just attack. Even though the everything is what he is doing, I hear it up here from otherwise reasonable people, and it scares me.
Yeah, it's very effective. The response by the Trump people that all it is the Democrats coming at me from every direction trying to undo the legitimate election. They're trying to stifle me every step of the way, and I'm going to fight for you. And some people buy that. And it, let's face it, there's an element of truth to it. I think Democrats would, I think many would admit that they want to do everything they can to stop his policies from taking effect. I mean, who doesn't want to keep air clean, and who doesn't want to protect the environment? Who, you know, so it's legitimate that they're trying to stop Trump from what they're doing. And in the process, he's portraying it as strictly political, partisan, having nothing to do with anything wrong.
Which is so Orwellian, given how the Senate's
thing
operating.
Is,
and it's just...
I think I want to go back to this, to what I've been saying all along. It has to do with the way in which both parties and the people in both parties are protecting their interests. The Republicans, it seems to me, represent the haves in the society to a large degree. And, you know, don't confuse me with the facts. This guy may be terrible. We know he's terrible. But in the end, we don't want Medicare for all. We don't want these kinds of social policies because they will cost us more in our tax dollars, and we have ours already. So I think that's what you have to keep looking at. I think it's so important.
Let's go back to the letters. We go to Gina, who says, if Trump keeps bringing up investigating Biden's son, why don't the Democrats come back with why not investigate Trump's daughter and her dealings with China? I think this has to do with the narrow scope we were talking about earlier.
Yeah. Good point.
We also go to Patricia, who says, I recently read an article saying Trump will leave office only with a deal of immunity for himself and his children. Could this happen? If it did go that way, how disappointing. He needs to be held accountable.
Perhaps. I mean, I think that independent of whether he's impeached or whether he gets reelected in 2020, that at some point there's going to be a wave of lawsuits once he gets out of office that come from state's attorneys general.
Former business associates.
Sure, yeah. Exactly. So once this comes to light, whether it's Deutsche former Bank
paramours.
Or... you know, the attorney general in Manhattan, that they will come. It's just a matter of when.
A lot of damage can be done between that lip and cup.
Oh, I know.
That's for
not,
sure.
I'm not disagreeing with that.
Let's then check in with Carolyn, who says the fact that Trump's defense is so what's so wrong with asking other countries for help fighting corruption absolutely justifies the need for shift to parody the phone call. Americans need help to understand, and they were his audience, not so much his colleagues. It's an interesting point.
Yep.
All right. We welcome your letters as well, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. So what are we waiting for? Is there anything else, any other testimony coming out today? Is there anything going on?
I don't think there was anything on the docket today. When Congress comes back into session, there may be some open hearings, and that would make good television, good sound bites. That might help propel the Democrats' efforts forward, but it would also be countered by these these getting on my helicopter press conferences Trump has, and you'll see the rhetoric go back and forth.
And we don't know. We certainly don't know who is getting courage from watching other whistleblowers here. Clearly, a lot of people know a lot of stuff. And there comes that moment when people will say, oh, the hell with it. I will come forward and I will say my thing because I have to rest easy for the rest of my life and maybe after that.
Yeah, and you can only imagine with more whistleblowers coming forward that we're going to see more, for want of a better term, erratic behavior from the president.
Even more unhinged.
Absolutely. I mean, we were during one of the breaks we were talking about, and Mike pointed out last weekend the president tweeted over 300 times. So
this is a man with way too much time on his hands.
Executive time on his hands.
He's a president. What is he doing?
Well, he's not involved in developing any policy or anything. Right. So he's just creating scandals and then fending him off.
His argument is that I would be developing policy and I would be running this country if I wasn't getting a constant barrage of these attacks by the Democrats. And some people agree with him. That we're not being able to operate and function as a government because it's the Democrats going after me. People are sympathetic to that.
Yeah. Well, some people are.
To some degree, that may be
unsophisticated.
I think that hits a larger truth is that, I mean, I think most people in their lives have felt persecuted by their boss, by a coworker, and they're just like, oh, this person just has it out for me. And I think Trump appeals to that, and it really curries sympathy and empathy with.
He appeals to the white folks who feel victimized and marginalized because there are people of color existing in this country, let alone taking jobs or having a job, which they consider to be there.
If that were all it was, he wouldn't have been elected. He appeals to people who feel like the Democrats don't represent them.
But,
and that was the mistake of 2016.
But Mike, the reason why those people feel like the Democrats don't represent them is because the Democrats talk about issues that impact LGBT people, women of color, men of color.
What about the union?
Different people.
Union people went for Trump.
Well,
and that's one of the
not all of them. Some.
But you're right. Usually they wouldn't. And that's why I think Trump was so worried in July when the polling was showing Joe Biden on top of the Democratic race that he's the guy that can pull the unions back over firmly into the blue.
I think you're going to see those folks, some of those folks who voted for him because they wanted change. They thought they'd get some change if he was elected, go back to the Democrats realizing they've lost their jobs.
But the Democrats have to show them something that they're going to do. And now it looks like 15 different things they're going to do, and they don't all agree.
You're starting to see those cracks in the employment report this morning. Manufacturing lost 2,000 jobs.
They already said the manufacturing
primarily due to the decline in exports, which is the direct result of the trade war. So Trump's whole policy of like we're bringing back blue collar jobs, we're going to make America great
again
with all of this. Yeah,
coal is down.
I mean, the cracks are already there. So I really hope Mike's right that these unions who sided with Trump in 2016, just realize what they did
Let's be clear. It's not the unions. It's some union
members.
But now, even after the Janus decision, unions are not losing membership. Unions are gaining membership. They're getting stronger.
Yeah, yeah, Libby. Let's not gild the lily here.
Well,
it's
true.
They might be gaining members, but they're losing the share of the workforce.
And have you heard about any progress in the GM strike?
It's kind of
mired in.
I was a kid, if there was a 3 or 4 week strike, car manufacturer strike would be on the front page of every paper every single day, and it's not anymore.
Well, that's the number. How many people are in the United Auto Workers today versus 1980?
Yeah, right.
Sure. Another great point.
Probably a well, thank you small for calling fraction. Me a kid in 1980. Yes, I really do appreciate that.
We'll take a break. We all can beam. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Aaron Pasitti, and Libby Post. We welcome your letters. We have a lot of them. Steve writes, I don't know a single Democrat who won't crawl across hot coals to vote in 2020. We go to Ed, who says, I'm afraid all of this impeachment turmoil will, at best, only end up feeding a Trump doing what he has to do to drain the swamp narrative. As Democrats, we have to start thinking about how this is going to play out. Is Joe Biden already damaged goods?
I don't think so. I have a tough time. I mean, I have a tough time seeing anything Trump has said that damages Biden's credibility.
Well, I think two things. One, I think that Biden, he has helped Biden. I think quite the opposite. Mm-hmm. He has basically invested in Biden, the idea that Biden will be the opponent. And that has got to have helped Biden. It brings him out further. And the Democrats tend to get behind him as a result of this thing. However, I have said from the very beginning, I don't think that kid had any business being there.
Yep.
It was from day one. And I think to some degree, Biden has suffered from that. You can argue he didn't do anything wrong, but you can also understand that it was almost Clintonian in that his kid, with very little to go, very little of importance behind him or stature, gets this job in Ukraine. And I have always thought that that was really a bad mistake on Biden's part.
Yeah, and Trump is exploiting that quite well. I mean, yes. Regardless of whether the prosecutor in Ukraine was investigating the oil, the gas company and some of the misinformation that's been put forth, it's been alleged that Biden, young Biden, made something like $50,000 a year for a couple of years. I mean, that's almost more than $500,000. I mean, it's a lot of money, and that
many people, Mike, are pointing out. If the Democrats had a brain in their head, they would be showing equivalency. While I've said that about young Biden, on the part of all of the Trump younger people.
You know, they may have all of this, and they're just.
I'm sorry. I just want to correct. You said it was $50,000 a month.
A month.
Oh, they say a year. Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
A month.
Yeah.
Yes,
a month.
Right. That's why
that's
we
a
add
lot
up.
Of money.
A year and a half, it would add up to
$600,000. It's still a lot of money.
Yeah. So, we're talking millions.
Thanks. Yeah, but, you know, yes.
Not billions, as Trump says.
The Democrats might have all of this, and they're just biding their time to do it at the right time. Because to dump everything at once, it's like
it might adds to the confusion.
Yeah,
it adds to the
right,
chaos.
It adds to the confusion. Yeah. You know, Nancy Pelosi waited on the impeachment until she knew she had something, right. I mean, she is brilliant political strategy.
By the way, I agree with you. I think that's exactly right.
Yeah. So, you know, we all have to. We're so impatient because we want this man gone. This man is not going to be gone until November of 20. Well, on January of 2021. And we have to let the folks. I know Mike's looking up to the heavens. And we need to let the process run its course. And we need to let the folks in Washington, the political folks in Washington, like Pelosi, do the strategy that she thinks will work. And up until this point, she's been pretty spot on.
By the way, Libby, I think you may be right. We may have to wait until the election. However, I do believe that that there is so much out there right now that somebody may compromise Trump to the point where he has to leave.
Well, from your
reason, he has to leave. Right. Is because it would leave Pence free to basically pardon him.
That's right. And so there is that, unless they both go down, and then it's President Pelosi.
Unless they do it the way that Nixon did it, where Agnew got knocked out first, and he got to choose who would be the vice president.
Or go look at the 25th Amendment or the rest of it. Sure.
All right, Marwetter, as we off we go to Portia, who says, what is the panel's opinion on the smear campaign that's going on against Antonio Delgado? There is a series of ads running. I mentioned it yesterday that if you watch television for 10 minutes, you will probably see the ad at least 10 times about Antonio
cable?
Delgado.
Is it a cable run or is it
Oh, no,
network?
It's right on network television. Oh. It's right on prime time. Quite a few of them.
I've News seen adjacent it
a
few times.
Yeah. A lot of, I was watching it during Colbert, which I thought was an interesting placement, but go ahead, Mike.
Does it look like the ad that was running last year?
No.
No. It's the Republican National Committee basically saying, hold him accountable. He promised to fix health care. He didn't do that. He promised to do this, and he didn't do that. And now he wants more investigations, more committee inquiries. You know, tell him to do his job. It wasn't promoting the Republican wannabe for that position. It was strictly
a negative.
Kind of. And it's so funny when they say, he didn't fix health care. Wait a minute. He voted for health care to be fixed.
Yeah.
Somebody else didn't fix it.
Okay, so it's a competitive district. We know that.
Yep.
We know that they think they can take it. There may be some tinges of racism here. I'm not prepared to say it completely yet, but, you know, I mean, I think it's quite clear. And so they think they have a shot at it, and they're going to take it. They're going to spend money.
Well, usually a newly elected Congress member is most vulnerable after the first term.
Right.
And if they don't get him now, he's pretty
it's
much
hard.
Got entrenched.
But it is, you know, the thing is, he's done a really good job being all over his district, doing the constituent
That's
work.
About all you can do as
right.
a freshman
right.
Congress
And he got
member.
A farm bill passed and signed into law that helps a lot of his constituents. So he's doing the work. And
he was cautious about whether to support impeachment. He was one of the holdouts who didn't back the impeachment inquiry until now and didn't come out crazy for it right away.
Realizing that I'm opening up an entire new can of worms. So if he is truly vulnerable, did John Faso make a mistake in announcing that he wouldn't seek to run against him again?
No, I don't think so. I think John Faso would not be successful.
Right.
It would be a repeat of the previous
right.
election, and it would come out the same way. I think somebody new has to come along with looking fresh and sort of distanced from Trump and look moderate to that very moderate kind
it's
of purple.
Yes, a very moderate purple district.
And that would be an interesting race, and it may well be.
Right.
Well,
the guy,
let's see if there's a competitive primary.
Right. Well, I don't think there'll be
a
primary.
You may get a Trumper in there,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, a Republican primary?
Yes.
There
yeah.
may be. Yeah, there won't
yeah.
be a Democrat.
You may
primary.
Get a Trumper in there, in which case they may win.
I think some former Army guy is...
We were mentioning yesterday that we didn't know, or 2 days ago, that we didn't know
it's
who was
It's a retired
running.
Two-star general
yeah.
Running against him.
No, is he the only announced candidate? I've heard that there's either one or three. I don't know exactly. Is he the only announced candidate so far?
I don't know of any others. Yeah.
Okay.
Is it Tony German, I believe?
Yes.
His name? Yeah.
All right. Gail writes to us and says, whoever speaks first wins the news cycle. When Nancy launched the inquiry before the phone call was released, she finally moved faster than the Trumpites, and for 2 days they stumbled. Now they're out ahead. Republicans declared there was nothing in yesterday's hearing. Speak first, investigate after. That from Gail. We go to Mike, who said, I think the next plot point in the story is going to be how many, if any, Republican House members get some courage and vote for impeachment before it heads to the Senate. Anthony says, Michael Mukasey, who was the attorney general under former President George W. Bush, mentioned last night on the NewsHour that Trump is breaking no law requesting foreign help for his campaign. He mentioned that presidents have always done it.
Yeah, that's one of the Republican talking points, and it ignores the fact that an impeachment doesn't have to be a criminal offense. It can just be behavior that amounts to high crimes and misdemeanors against the Constitution, and that's a judgment made by lawmakers who vote on impeachment.
Bob says you guys are overthinking the why they stick with him issue. The real reason is that they love to see him infuriate liberals, regardless of whether his policies will damage them too. Hatred may not be rational, but it's real, and I suggest that it's the most important factor in explaining Trump's loyal 40%, no matter the costs.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the resentment against the very wealthy coastal elite who've been,
them and us. That's mm-hmm. the way it's being portrayed. Right. It's the radical socialists who want to take over and take away, you know, all your rights. And I saw a bumper sticker the other day. It said, elect Trump 2020, make liberals cry again.
Yeah. I mean, this whole notion that we're evil.
Yeah.
You know, and it goes back to what I was saying before.
We're socialists.
Right. But it goes back to the fear of white people in this country that they're no longer going to be in the majority, and they're not going to be in the majority.
But statistically, they are not going to be in the majority, and it's a fact of life.
Right. Yeah. It is a fact
We're
of life.
We're going to have a very brown country.
But it scares the living daylights out of these folks, and they're voting
You may have a brown country, Mike and Libby.
We have a white economy.
Exactly. And you have 1% owning the United States right now.
Right.
Let's not ever forget that. So I don't know that it all changes that much. You know, this business of the other is so interesting. Here in Great Barrington, little tiny Great Barrington, we have a beautiful, pristine lake, Lake Mansfield. And we're all trying to save it and make sure that, you know, that the road that's next to it doesn't fall into the lake and that people can continue to enjoy it as they have all along. I'm getting to the point. The point really is that there are people in town who are saying, all you rich people want to enjoy that lake. Mm-hmm. You don't want, in other words, there's always that kind of thing that exists. It's terrible.
Petty writes to us and says, you asked what Trump is accomplishing in his office. While Trump rants in our faces, his toadies are working overtime to strip people of their food stamps. Is anyone on the panel on food stamps? It's a sad and desperate perspective. Hunger is real. It hurts really bad.
And the majority of food stamps go to people in red states. So it's just like they're voting against their own interests.
And, you know, I mean, it's probably proposed as, we need to, you know, start trimming the fat of the budget. The change to the food stamp program saves, what, $1 billion a year over 5 years in a $4 trillion government budget?
It's buckus,
it's preposterous. It's just a war against the poor.
Let's go to Karen, who says, ask the question, whose fault is it that Trump doesn't get anything done? Blaming the Democrats for Trump's failures is crazy. He had a GOP Congress for the first 2 years. Think of all he promised and hasn't delivered on. And then she has a whole list. He was never really prepared to be president.
Wait. Are we sure he wanted anything? I mean, the fact is, he said, I have a great health care plan. I'll make it happen.
He never
presented one.
She said all of his promises, the wall, not built, not paid for by Mexico, health care, nothing, infrastructure, nothing, national deficit at historic level. So going down that road. We then, two more letters here that I have in front of me. Will says Trump's approval numbers are going up, money flowing into his campaign in record numbers. You screamed for 3 years that Trump wasn't above the law. Now Biden is above the law, ? And?
Huh?
That's the narrative.
David says, believe me, I'm not a fan of Donald Trump, and I'll be very happy when this bizarre period in American history is over. Nevertheless, as a journalist, I've been trained to value accuracy and fairness. So regarding Trump's comments supposedly inviting the Russians to dig up Hillary Clinton's emails, if you look at what Trump said, how he said it, and the context in which it was said, a very good argument can be made that he was making a joke, not, as one of the panelists implied this morning, a serious request.
It's always a joke. It's always a joke. I was just joking. I said this about the Chinese. I said this about the Russians.
Now, what's your line, Alan?
Yeah. There is no joke.
There you go.
We attribute it to Freud. We don't really know if he said it.
But the point is, even if it was a joke, the Russians acted on it, according to the intelligence and the investigation of the Mueller
report.
He
didn't say it as a joke. He said it pretty seriously when
but
he said
it. You can't even assess, I mean, you can't assess what his intent was, whether it was a joke or not. So it's pointless. He said it. The Russians acted on it. That's whether it was a joke or not, the comment had real implications.
I think he knew the Russians had it. He said it. And then the Russians released it.
All right. Go ahead. We'll be post.
To say what I wanted to say.
You say what you want to say. The floor is yours.
Oh, thank you. So many of you know that I'm in a group called Capital Women, and we lost one of our leaders yesterday, Catherine Allen, who has been a community leader for a very, very long time, worked at Unity House, was the president of the board there. Succumbed to glioblastoma, and she will be very sorely missed by this entire community. She really defined what it meant to be committed to community and to do community work. And so, you know, our thoughts go out to her family. And
always very sad.
Yep.
Yeah.
And
I'm
if
sorry,
we have
Libby.
One second here, yes. Libby, I was interested in. I had hoped you would talk about it today. Before the Supreme Court is whether somebody can be fired because they're gay.
Right. I mean, this is the splitting the hair between a noun and a verb. I mean, it really is. And the fact of the matter is that gay men, as an example in the plaintiffs, men who were gay got fired because of their sexual activity. So they did get fired because of their sex.
Because they joined a gay team.
Right, right. And so he got fired because he was a man who joined a gay team. And so it is sex discrimination based on the noun of sex, not the verb.
What does it tell us that this is the first case that the Supreme Court will be hearing come this first Monday in October?
Well, I think it's going to be a cause celebre all around. I think you're going to see lots of people on both sides of this issue pushing this. And it's going to be very hard for the court to say you can marry, but you can get fired for getting married. You know, marry Sunday, fired Monday is what people are saying. So I really don't know what's going to happen. We do no longer have Anthony Kennedy on the court, who was writing the majority opinions. We do have John Roberts on the court, who believes in the integrity of the court, but it's unclear. It's unclear. We know we have four votes for us, but John Roberts is the linchpin. I can't see Alito or any of the other three saying, oh, gays shouldn't be fired. And so we'll see what happens.
All right. We are out of time. My thanks to everybody. Remember the Walkbox, WAMC.org, WAMC.org. Important stuff, Alan.
Important stuff. We can't go on without everybody doing something. And that something can be $5. It can be $10,000. But whatever you can afford, if you love this radio station, let's do something now at WAMC.org or call us 1-800-323-9262.
Alan, Mike, Aaron, Libby, have a beautiful weekend. We'll be back on Monday. More show after this.